So I want you to get up now. I want all of you to get up out of your chairs. I want you to get up right now and go to the window, open it, and stick your head out and yell, "I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore!"
The game here in Louisville, Kentucky. Anyway, welcome to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MM Radio Network. We're going to make sure you guys are fully aware, day 15 of the government shutdown, and the nukes have not went off. There are reports that there were nukes set off in the ocean or something on the other side of South Carolina. It was obvious, it was clear earlier this year, it was kind of a shutdown. You believe that if you want to. Businesses as usual in the United States of America, we're not dead yet. For you Muslims, if they're all praise be to Allah. Yeah, I don't know. Ed Barton, how are you, sir?
Doing all right, sir. Although, in light of the government shutdown, I actually, yesterday, I've got, I think it's kind of funny. The reason I called in late is because I have a pinched nerve. And I was given some painkillers for the pinched nerve, and they kind of knocked me for a loop. For whatever reason, I actually snapped too and looked, and I was like, oh, damn.
But, man, I tell you what,
feeling a lot better today. And, with the shutdown, yeah. I felt it was real important that me and my 16-year-old daughter, I had to show her the ways of pulling stumps with a tractor an hour ago. Actually, 15 minutes ago, we were doing it. So, we've got to do some sod busting. We've got to learn how to grow our own crops and knock down our own trees for firewood because, the end is nigh.
Well, the important thing is the government shutdown has not stopped your tractor.
I'm too honest. That's a lie. My wife wanted some trees removed, so me and my daughter thinks it's really, really cool to wrap steel cables around them and pull them out.
I knew that anyway, but I was going to get away with it. But the real important thing is that your tractor was still running. The government shutdown did not stop your tractor, and you can still get fuel for your tractor. So the government shutdown has not affected your daily life, has it?
Well, it wouldn't matter. I've got lots of diesel fuel hidden in that bus that I buried on my property, remember?
I remember well. I tell you, we've got so much to get into tonight. This government shutdown, or this so-called government shutdown, I should say, is just part of it. Right here in Louisville, we've got a couple of things we need to talk about. As we told everybody months and months ago, when Greg Heisman was installed over at MSD. He left Louisville Water Company, was installed at MSD. We told everybody that this was just because they want to merge the Louisville Water Company and MSD. Took a lot of backlash, people telling us we were wrong. Well, guess what, folks? We are now, according to BizJournals.com, there is a recommendation being worked on that will be presented this fall on a proposal to merge the Louisville Water Company and the Louisville-Jefferson County Metropolitan Sewer District. So, folks, you know what? We're never wrong. We're not allowed to be wrong. I'm sorry to tell you that. But Jim Bramall, the guy who took over the Louisville Water Company, president and CEO, when Greg Heisman was installed at the MSD, he was also Greg Heisman's assistant director over at the Louisville Water Company. So he just moved up the final rung and Greg over to MSD. So his buddy been playing ball. And we're going to get this thing done, I'm sure of that. When that happens, folks, look out for some major rate hikes. You know, so
we've got
to look at it.
As we've talked about, you know, MSD raises your rates to cover all those overpriced bonds and swaps that they've had, they've engaged in, and to the point that they bill you when it rains, they bill you for extra when you use a bunch of water and they think it's running off, and they bill you when you flush the toilet. So now they're going to bill you when you turn the water on, to cover for all those bad bets because. Just going off on a tangent real quick, is way back when we got into all these credit default and interest rate default swaps, it was all based on the interest rate possibly going up. And now that Janet Yellen has been nominated, she's just another Bernanke. So don't look for the rates to go up until they absolutely have to. So those swaps are going to stay they're going to stay upside down.
Well, we really got to pay attention to this, and it's really fascinating because people aren't looking at the big picture. MSD can actually raise rates every year up to 8% without oversight from the Metro County, any approval whatsoever. They're not regulated through the PSC. So what we run into here, or the Public Service Commission, for you guys who know what PSC is, so what we run into here is we had one major hike of about 32% back in 2006. And MSD consistently raises the rates each and every year up to the maximum allowed before they have to get approval. The Louisville Water Company is supposedly a private entity, okay, but they're a private government entity. Why do I say that? Because Louisville owns 100% of the shares, lock, stock, and barrel, in Louisville Water Company. So all the money that the Louisville Water Company makes goes straight to the city of Louisville. So my opinion and opinion of a whole lot of people in this town, it's basically an illegal tax. So what you're going to find here is these two are going to combine to make it even easier to raise rates and create a higher level of raising rates. And you're going to find your rate hike going to be astronomical in the next years that this merger takes place. Let's go to the phones right out of the gate, Ed. We've already got somebody wanting to get on there. Adam, how are you? What can we do for you?
Good evening. I am calling from England.
How are you, sir?
I am very good, Squire. Thank you. How be you?
I'm great. What can we do for you?
I would just like to make a request, please.
Sure.
I have a dear friend and colleague by the name of Disney. Live air.
Try that again. What was that?
Did you hear anything of what I said, or should I...
No, didn't hear anything at all.
Oh, okay. I'm from England. My dear friend...
I got that. You said you had a question.
Yes, a request. A dear friend and colleague by the name of Didier. He would like to read his poem out on a live radio station. It's part of his bucket list, you see.
Part of his bucket list. I tell you what, let me put you back in the queue. I'll put you back in the queue, and when we go to break, I'll get fair with you. We'll talk about it for a minute when we go to break. How's that?
That sounds brilliant. How long will it be? I don't know.
It'll be a few minutes, probably at least 15, 20 minutes. I'll put you in the queue, and I'll get back with you when we go to break.
All right, so
we'll take care of that. Ed, okay, so let's get back to this. The Louisville Water Company is now going to merge with MSD, which we predicted all along would happen. And how's this going to affect rates? Because as we know, MSD has to get semi-approval after they go above 7 or 8%. But the Louisville Water Company can raise their rates at will because they're a private corporation. So isn't this just another way to get more money?
Oh, well, absolutely. I mean, it's they're basically, you know, it, in any private sector, true private sector, this would be a monopoly. This would, they basically, if it's liquid in your life, they control it, and that's just it. I mean, they everything from the water in to your fire protection, to water in your lawn, to, you know, water out. They basically control, you know, and you can't live without water, so they basically control it. So, you know, they definitely got you. And I mean, they already, like you say, they already collude and swap notes already, because, you know, if you use a lot of water, so a lot of times that we found, you know, if you do something like fill up a swimming pool or something, if your water usage is up, they automatically apparently communicate that between each other and say, well, your sewage must, you know, because your waste disposal tends to be
right.
a factor of how much water you use. So, you know, what the hell? They're already swapping notes, so.
And there
they're
you
just
go.
Making it formal now.
Well, there you go. And, you know, there's other news going on in Louisville. We'll get to national stuff in just a second, folks. But there's other news going on in Louisville as well. WFPL put out a story about Councilwoman Mary Woolridge. Kelly Downard was speaking at a Louisville forum last week, and they were talking about the Barbara Shanklin council court trial and things like that. And, you know, as soon as that trial was over, Councilman Downard made a statement that he's never been so embarrassed or ashamed to be a council person in his life. And everybody was wondering why he was so upset. Well, last week he went to tell the whole world at this forum that he was angry because Councilwoman Mary Woolridge told everybody who were deliberating the case that she would never vote again to remove a black female from office. Now, you guys that are just tuning in, former Councilwoman Delaney Green was removed and impeached from office based on charges that I brought that basically mimicked and mirrored the charges brought to Councilwoman Barbara Shanklin. She Green was an African-American woman. She was a black female councilwoman. And every council member that voted, it was an unanimous vote to take her out of office. Councilwoman Barbara Shanklin is a black councilwoman. And now all of a sudden, they can't do the job and remove her for fear of backlash. So, this is a good example of racial divide even among the council members, isn't it?
Well, it's racial divide. It's racism. It's you know, whether you're favorable or unfavorable. If you're basically, you know, as everyone did, determined that she was guilty, but the sentencing is based on race. That's racism.
Right.
I mean, you know, start flipping this thing around a little bit. What if somebody said, "Oh, I'll always vote against a black council member," or what if somebody would have said, "Well, I'll always vote against a white council member," or "I'll always vote against a, you know, or I'll never vote to remove a white council member." You know, think of the outrage that would come from that if you simply reversed any of those from what she said. You know, apparently they did report it. Fair enough, but they kind of let it go. And you can bet your ass in any other scenario, any other three variables on the black, white, you know, convict, not convict, or remove, not remove, you can bet your ass everybody would be up in arms about it and would still be on it.
And see, there you go. That's a big thing for me because, you know, Kelly Downard said the same thing. Kelly Downard looked at the people at the forum and told them, frankly, if I turn to you and I say I will never to expel a white man from the Metro Council, what thoughts did you just have? And, of course, it would be anger. You'd be revulsed. You'd be, you know, it would be a racial divide unheard of if a white person had said the same thing that Mary Woolridge had. And yet, funnily enough, you had a quick blurb at the Courier Journal and at WFPL, familiar with WFPL, I did an article on it. You know, you look at this stuff, and then it just died. Nobody touched on it. Now, I understand the government shutdown. At the end of the day, you know, even here at MBM Radio, you know, we originate out of Louisville, Kentucky. This is Louisville News as well. So at the end of the day, you know, this was something that if it would have been the role, would have been reversed. As you pointed out, and as Councilman Downard pointed out, this thing would be bloodshed on the news networks. The local news networks would have a field day with this. This thing would still be going. So, you see, we do have that racism feel here. you know, and leadership is leading the way. And I think this is a prime example. You know, people and their attitudes reflect their leadership. And I just want to put that out there because I thought that was very disturbing. You can go to WFPL.org and look at that story, you know, on the racial bias thing. I was quoted in it as well. They always come to me for information, you know, but it's interesting that she was able to get away with that, say, and only because she happened to be a black female council member. So it's pretty interesting paradox to me. We've got other things going on, too. We just flat out haven't had time to get into. But late last week, we had an article come out, and it concerned jobs. A woman by the name of Nancy Salgado, you know, said that she was threatened to be arrested because she said something negative about McDonald's CEO, Jeff Stratton. Yes, that's what I said. McDonald's CEO, Jeff Stratton. And what was the deal here? They apparently, there was a public venue, where Nancy Salgado was sitting there with the CEO of McDonald's, and, you know, she was angry because she's one of those $15 an hour people. And what really got me here was, now she's scared you're going to lose her job for taking on McDonald's CEO. I think she should lose her job anyway. If she's that dumb, she don't need to work anywhere. But this is what gets me. According to a video interview that she gave to realnews.com, she stood up to the McDonald's CEO and was demanding more pay because she didn't think it was right that she'd been working for roughly 10 years at McDonald's since she was 16 years old. She says she's never had a raise. She makes $8.25 an hour. She works between 30 and 40 hours a week. And she thinks that that's just tragic because sometimes she can't provide a gallon of milk for her two kids. That's where my rub is. She went to work at McDonald's at 16 years old, knowing that this is a dead-end job. Everybody does. It's a starter job. She's not that dumb, or maybe she is. But now, all of a sudden, it's McDonald's responsibility to pay her more money. She can provide more milk for her kids. She's a single mom. Why has she not done anything to better herself? Why is it McDonald's responsibility to feed her children, Ed?
Well, you know, please name the father of these children so we can tag their ass for it. You know, these kids are theirs, too. I mean, you know, I can't raise my kids on this. It's like, guess what? If you know, the guy that played hit and run with you would own up to his responsibility, it'd probably be twice as easy. And, you know, another thing that my late father used to say, he'd look at employees and say, you know, they'd whatever they were making, they'd have two or three kids, they'd go out and their wife would get pregnant, their girlfriend would get pregnant, and they'd say, oh, come in and skin it. And my dad would just shake his head and say, boy, you're going to screw yourself right into poverty.
Yeah. Well, he's absolutely right.
You know, it's a crass way of putting it, but that's the God's honest truth. I'm sorry. If you're making $8 an hour, you know, and 6 years into a job or something, you're stuck at, you want to supersize that, you know, you want fries with that, and you're still stuck at that, you know, I hate to say it this way, because it does sound somewhat callous, but it's reality, that having children is a function of income. You know, and that's part of the responsibility of having children, is you've got to get yourself in a place where you can raise them, you know, and you can take responsibility for them. She's pulling $8 an hour, you know, whatever, $200, $250 a week gross. And you know what? I'm sorry. That's, you have to look at it and just say, I would like to have kids, but I think I need to go back to school and maybe become a paralegal or something. Because, you know, you know, X, Y, Z, you can't raise kids on $10,000 a year, and you sure as hell can't raise two. And, you know, so I'm sorry. That's reality.
And, you know, that is the reality. That's what drives me nuts. And Salgado was quoted as saying, I'm a single mother of two, and it's hard for me to feed my two kids or struggle day to day. It's not fair that I have to make $8.25 an hour when I've been working at McDonald's for 10 years. No, what's not fair, Ms. Salgado, is that you're too stupid to realize the situation you're in and take responsibility for your life. She wants to go on the poor me, and this is what drives me nuts. And I know it sounds callous, but you know what? I didn't abandon my children. My wife didn't abandon our children. We both worked jobs. We worked opposite shifts the whole time our children were growing up, so that there was always a parent at home to watch our children. And the government did not have to pay for my kids' food and their clothes and their shelter. That was our responsibility. We took care of our responsibility. It wasn't your responsibility, Ed, nor was it McDonald's responsibility. And that's the problem today. Everybody gets to play this poor me. You know, this woman was 16 years old when she started there. She still chose to bring two kids into the world. And, yes, she chose to, folks. If a woman has a right to choose whether to get an abortion or not, she certainly has a right to choose whether she protects herself with pregnancy or not with the use of a condom or birth control pills. So, you know, that's
well,
the whole thing.
You know, and despite what you'll hear the left say, women do have the right to abortions, and women do have the right to birth control. And if you go to Walmart, it costs $5, if that much.
Well,
you know,
Sarah Fluke.
And that was before Obamacare. You could get, you know, a lot of the base birth controls for $5 a month. So I'm sorry. Like I say, it sounds callous, but at some point, you know, people make bad decisions. And having a kid you can't afford, you know, God love the children. But at some point, you know, it amazes me sometimes that the liberal left will sit there and say, well, you don't support the children. You know, you're pro-life until they're born, and then you don't want to feed them and do this. It's like, well, once they're born, they're kind of their parents' responsibilities, you know.
Thank you. And even
animals kind of get that.
And that's all rubbish. You're absolutely right. It's not our responsibility to raise somebody else's kids, you know. When my wife, you know, got pregnant with our first child, you know, we were poor, you know, and to use the term, it was an accident. Okay, it was an accident. It wasn't an accident. You know, we just decided to do something without protection, and pop, here's my old son on the way, and that's okay. Love him dearly. Love my wife. We've been married 30 years. The reality is, you know, at that point, I had an obligation and a responsibility that was greater than I was prepared for. So I went out and worked and did something different with my life to make sure that I took care of that responsibility. That's it. That's what adults do.
And you know what? Fair is fair. I like to think I'm a sympathetic guy, you know, and I really do feel for the working class. You know, if you go out there and you try to make a go of it and you start your own business and it doesn't work out, or you go to school and you try to get a better job, but it's, you know, corporate and somebody stab you in the back or something, if it doesn't work out, absolutely, society should step up and give you a hand. You know, you tried, you failed. We're not going to let the kids go hungry for that. Absolutely not. We're not going to let them go without health care. But I'm sorry, when you just sort of slip it into neutral and park your ass in a job for 10 years and don't try to improve yourself, and then at the end of that say, well, I want more money.
Right.
You know, I want a better life. And you haven't done anything to get that life. It's hard for me to have sympathy.
Well, it really is.
You know, things go wrong for people that try, but it's when things go wrong more often for people who don't try.
Right, and of course, the media.
I can't drum up a whole lot of sympathy for that.
And I agree with you totally. And you know, and of course, liberal media is going crazy with this kind of stuff. You know, they're citing these MIT living wage calculators. You know, anybody that's going to listen to a blowhard that has never done anything, that has done nothing outside of school, and is now teaching people about crap they know nothing about, deserves what you get. I don't want to hear these MIT professors coming up with a living wage calculator. They wouldn't know the first damn thing about how to live in a real world. They've always had that protectionism. But they want to say that the living wage for a single adult with two children in Chicago, which is where this lady is from, is $25.51 an hour. If you want $25.51 an hour, you go get $25.51 an hour. But you bring something to the table to justify it. You're not justifying that kind of money. Asking somebody if they want to suicide.
The thing that gets me is a lot of times when you hear these people talk living wages, they think they go in and it's universal that every job should pay a living wage. And as we've said many a time before, no. No, your skill set, you know, yes, there are living wage, you know, there are jobs that pay a living wage, and there are jobs that are entry level, and there are jobs that are part-time, and there are jobs that are temporary, and then, you know what, there are jobs that you just on to so you can get work release and not spend all day in the county jail.
Well, that's true,
no,
too.
There are different levels of jobs, and it's just, you know, it's one size fits all. Everybody should earn a living wage. It's like, oh, right. So a kid who can't piss clean at age 17 that wants to get a job because he got a 16-year-old girlfriend pregnant deserves a living wage, and he's functionally illiterate.
What about me?
Three digits, you know, without a calculator. It's like, right, that's a living wage? No.
Well, here's the ridiculous thing, too, though, Ed. Because,
try not to pee on your leg when you get excited.
Well, here's an interesting thing, too, though, because this is one thing that always drives me nuts. You got some daggone professor at college like MIT who knows the first thing about the real world telling you what a living wage is. You know, to me, there is no definition for a living wage. Some people can live on minimum wage. It depends on what standard of living you want. There's the difference. There's three things in this world that every decision is based on, in my opinion. That's needs, wants, and desires. Your needs always come first. If you have a little left over, you go with one. If you have a lot left over, you got to maybe work towards something you really desire. But the flat bottom line is every decision you make is going to be based on those three things. I don't care how simple it is. It's as simple as it gets. I don't care why people want to make this crazy. So if you have a living wage, you need shelter. You need food. You need clothes on your back. Those are your needs. Now, do you need to live in a $200,000 home? Do you need to live in an $800 a month rent apartment? Do you need to have the less Tommy Hilfiger clothes? No, you don't. You live in a cheaper place because you have to have that. You know, you buy, you know, instead of buying new brand vegetables, you buy the value crap or the generic stuff off the shelves at Kroger. You know, and if you have to get your clothes at a Goodwill or go to one of those secondhand salvage shops, you get them there. You meet your needs, okay? But your needs are based on my income, and that's what drives me nuts. A living wage. There are some people that can live on $10 an hour, and other people feel like they're entitled to $25 and $30 because they want to compete with the Joneses or have what somebody else got, but they don't want to do the work necessary to get there. I mean, am I crazy? I don't understand the living wage argument, Ed.
No, I think you're absolutely right, and I think it also you need to factor in dual income. I mean, everybody I know has –
a case like this,
you've got to base it on how many kids you've got. And of course, prior to Obamacare, you know, forcing people to buy health care, you know, a lot of younger people could pull it off. They could do without insurance. They could take a multi, you know, hey, I've been there, survive on two Whoppers and a multivitamin a day.
You know, we've all been there.
Maybe some ramen noodles. You don't need health care because you're bulletproof. You know, you got a bike or a beater of a car that's got liability. Yeah, you're right. People, when they want, can live pretty cheap. If you're throwing in this minimum standard stuff and somebody's arbitrarily saying, well, you got to have health care. You're like, well,
right.
You used to not, and I used to not, you know. But, yeah, and there's other things. It comes to household income. I know a lot of immigrant families. And I'm telling you what, it's one of the things I've had some immigrants that have worked for me before. And I've tried to tell Americans, I said, watch them. Watch what they do. You know, they get in. They don't rent an apartment. They find a friend, and they rent dirt cheap in the basement. You know, they live low for a while. Then they buy a house and they fix it up. But every working age kid in the house, once they're 16 and can have their job, they drive. And they contribute to the household income. Yeah,
sure.
The husband and wife, I've still got guys that work two jobs. They work full-time for me and deliver papers in the morning. You know, and I tell them, they're always hustling. They're always hustling. They fix their own stuff. It's like, look, you can do it, but these guys, like you say, these MIT professors, I think they're drawing their conclusions, honestly, sometimes from some whiny-ass Americans. You've got to see these immigrants in action. My father's old neighborhood, they had some neighbors, I swear, I think 13 people in the house next door to my dad. But it's what they did. They were like Chinese or Japanese, and they would start off and somebody would buy the house, and then they would have relatives come over and they would stay there until they saved enough money. You know, there are ways to do it. It's not this cookie cutter crap where it's like, well, you know, when you're 18, you want to be out. By 23, you're going to have kids. You're going to need. He's like, no. I mean, he told my own daughters. You know, I used to tell them, you know, when you graduate college, you're out. Now I tell them, wow, we really screwed the economy up. When you graduate college, you don't live at home for a while. You just got to show me where you're saving up my down payment on a house. He said, you'll have it in a matter
right.
of years. And then you'd be on, you
right.
know, you get yourself rolling forward. So, yeah, these MIT professors, they want to go cookie cutter. And then they come out with the right talking points that the New York Times or somebody wants to put out there to argue for minimum wage. You know what?
Most liberalism at its finest.
They get all their publicity. They get everything they want.
It's liberalism at its finest. And every time you raise the minimum wage, you know, that what you run into is your spending power drops, so you're actually losing money. People don't want to get that. We're going to take a quick break and come back. When we come back, we are going to get into the national stuff, man. It is time. So stick around, folks. You're listening to the Ed Springsteen Show right here on the MVM Radio Network. Stay tuned. So you're driving down the road, minding your own business, and bam, something hits your windshield and leaves a ding or even worse. Has this happened to you? Don't worry, folks. Help is here. Huntsman Auto Glass is family-owned and operated right here in Louisville. Huntsman Auto Glass only uses original equipment manufacturer replacement glass, and in most cases, any repair or replacement is paid for by your auto insurance. That's right. No deductible, no cost to you. Call Huntsman Auto Glass at 502-214-8566 or go to huntsmanautoglass.com for more info. Huntsman Auto Glass, where they will fix your smash in a flash. Tell them Ed sent you.
Being a victim of crime is no joke, but you do have options that can help you avoid becoming a victim. I'm Ed Springsteen of the My View Matters radio show, and on behalf of myself and co-host Ed Martin, I urge each of you to help us fight against crime. You can do your part by calling Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE. Since 1982, Crime Stoppers has helped get over 23,000 criminals off the street with your help. Working together, we can make a difference to take our streets back. Please call Crime Stoppers at 582-CLUE, or you can visit them online at www.582clue.com. Remember, Crime Stoppers always offers up to a $1,000 reward. Get involved and help make a positive change in your neighborhood. Thanks.
Advertisers, here's a great way to reach a quality audience. Get heard on My View Matters and make some noise in the marketplace.
Email MyViewMatters at AOL.com for advertising opportunities. Make a...
couple of shots, and then imagine you're Barack Obama and you're Harry Reid and John Boehner. This is the world we live in. This is the playground in our mind. I tell you, it is such a joke, Ed, what these clowns in Washington continue doing. Now, as we told everybody, and we talked about this before on there, the GOP was going to cave. There was never any doubt about that, but to what extent they were willing to go was always in question. Well, we're getting a better idea of where that is. The GOP is planning on extending federal spending through January and raise the debt ceiling through February, you know, kicking that can down the road. This is exactly what the Democrats said they wanted. So what have they actually done? I know that this is going to go over later tonight. No later than early tomorrow morning. What exactly did they accomplish with all of this crap?
Well, in hindsight, nothing, because they, you know, and I've said it time and time again, the thing that aggravates me, and I'm a Republican, and most of my Republican friends cringe when they hear me say this, but yeah, I got a libertarian pedigree, and as me and the guys, you know, certain other people who remain unnamed, we just kind of laugh and says, yeah, but politics doesn't pay my bills, so you don't tell me what to say. All they've done is contest. All they've done is push back on what Obama came up with. Now, everybody knew the debt ceiling was coming up. Everybody knew all this budget stuff was coming up. Where are the alternate ideas? Because that's, you know, that's the thing. Is when you see the polling information, is people are disgusted with Washington. You know, you get your 5%, your 5% approval rating, and now it's gotten to the point where I think I saw a poll the other day where even people, most people, I think the average is 25%, only 25% of any given congressional district even approve of their own Congress critters on average. I mean, and the reason is because they say it's dysfunctional and there's no leadership. You know, I'm sorry, but for the Republicans simply saying we're going to defund Obamacare, and, you know, any Republican that thinks independently is going to look around and says, okay, and you're going to do what? You know, you're just going to,
well, see, there you go.
Blow something up? You're just going to blow something up or kill something off or create a vacuum and nothing's going in there, you know, no private sector reforms or free market, you know, competition kind of legislation, nothing. Yeah. I mean, even with the budget, you know, it's one of the things
right.
that I'm still really hoping that comes out of this debt ceiling crap is one of the big problems that we face right now is they say, well, if we run out of the ability to borrow, you know, it's about 20% of government spending has to, you know, it's going to be frozen for a little bit. It's not going to, the bills aren't going to be paid for something. And everybody's saying, we don't know what to do. We don't,
the
you know,
reality
there's no template to this. I think one of the things that's going to come out of this is somebody ought to say, all right, you know, in case this happens again, let's come up with a template that says this, this, and this get paid 100%, this, 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 and this get paid 90%, this, this, and this, you know. And so on. It's like, you know, so basically we need to prioritize in the event that we're in this situation again, we need to prioritize what gets paid. And it needs to be put in black, you know, black ink on white paper, lay it out so that way we know if we hit the debt ceiling again and it doesn't pass and the government, you know, can't borrow any more money to pay for all this stuff, as David Adams would say, or stupid stuff, then there needs to be a template so we know exactly how this thing is going to hit. Sort of like the
suggestion. And I find that offensive.
We kind of knew how that was going to hit.
I find that offensive. If I was an elected senator or an elected representative of Washington, D.C. today, that whole statement would be totally offensive to me. How dare you suggest that elected representatives of the people should be forced to make common sense decisions on budgeting like we are forced to do every day as common folk? How dare you suggest that they should be held accountable to the same standard?
Hey,
isn't that a mindset? You know. Hey, you know,
you're right. We have to do it at the house. You know, that's the way it goes. You got to figure out how much of the credit card bill gets it. You know, you're gonna float that doctor's office bill for another month. You figure that stuff out. You do it in business too. You know, you got to pay the utilities, but you don't necessarily have to pay, you know, whatever, the LP gas people or something. You can float them a month. It's what you do. And like I say, I have no sympathy for the government. I think they should sit there and I think they should lay that bad boy out, you know, so that we can see when they do that, we'll find out where the pet projects are. We'll find out where the priorities are. We'll find out what's necessary and not necessary, because the unnecessary stuff is going to get some goose eggs down there at the bottom, you know. In the event of a government shutdown, what do they get paid? Or how long are they shut off? Indefinitely, you know, and other things like military benefits, no, you don't touch those. You got 80%, you know, you're paying them, period.
Well, and here's the thing, too. Part of what they're trying to attempt to do here now with the latest offer is that the House is actually trying to take back the power of the purse. You know, we've also talked over the last couple of weeks as all this started that the House has the constitutional authority. All right, they are the ones who have to fund government. All funding originates in the House. And what's happened over time is there's actually a Treasury Secretary has been granted the ability to use what they call extraordinary measures. So miss debt ceiling deadlines and stuff like that, the Treasury Secretary has the ability to decide who gets paid, who doesn't, and things like you're talking about. The House did not. So that is something that they're trying to in here. They're trying to get back to the Constitution. And that's only because of the Tea Partiers like Justin Amash, Ted Cruz, Rand Paul. You know, those guys were all in there pushing this. Now, what's really interesting is the other part of this is what's going to depend. The Senate won't look at it because the latest version of the House plan is also going to reinstate the Vitter Amendment. Those of you who know what the Vitter Amendment is, the Vitter Amendment was an amendment that was added that is going to strip Congress, all cabinet appointees, and their staffs of the exemption that President Obama gave them. Obama exempted all of these guys from subsidy. He gave them subsidy exemptions and stuff like that. What that means is typically on average, let's say you're a congressperson, the government pays $5,000 towards their health care every year. They pay for their health care $5,000 a year. What they have said is, okay, Congress is now going to go into the Obamacare exchange, but we're going to continue giving them $5,000 a year to pay for it. So they're not on a level footing with everybody that's responsible to be in Obamacare with individual mandate.
No.
Hello, are you there?
Ed? No, I was going to say absolutely.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I'm here.
Okay, yeah. So here's the thing. So they want to reinstate the Vitter Amendment, which is force Congress, cabinet appointees, and all of their staff to be on the same damn plan that everybody else in America is going to be on. And that is what the Senate Democrats are balking about. If they reinstate this amendment, Senate Democrats have already said if they reinstate this amendment, they will kill the bill and they're not going to do anything about it. And, oh, by the way, the House Democrats are not going to vote on this either because of the Vitter Amendment, which will put them on the same playing field that we are on. And it's really interesting because of that context. How can people continue blaming Republicans?
Well, I mean, you know, if that's the reason they're shutting it down, then it's a good play by the Republicans, finally. But, yeah, I mean, I'm sorry. It's, guys, you've got a pension. It's pretty sweet. You've had health care for a long time. You should be thankful for it, especially when the country's borrowing money to fund it.
Right.
And, look, dude, you guys, you know, most of them are millionaires, and they're all pulling down 150 large a year. You know, and they got $1 million staff budget. So it's not like these guys are struggling like those people, like, you know, like the people who want to get in the face of the McDonald's CEO.
Right,
these guys
right,
are not
right.
struggling. I'm sorry. You know, and if you look at the Obamacare scales, unless you got like 17 kids or something or 17 dependents, you're not lined up for any subsidies. You know, you're a congressman, you're a senator, you're, you know, one of their higher paid staffers. You're not up for subsidies. You're straight away. You know, you got to buy something straight out of the plan.
Well, you're absolutely right.
Subsidies,
this really...
you know, in the end, it's all going to work out pretty well because I know I do believe this year on paychecks on your final statement, they're going to start itemizing what your company funded insurance is for, which most people understand that's just setting you up to be taxed on it in the future,
sure.
1099 style or something, but. Well, if that happens, yeah, then these government people, you know, that'll be interesting to see if they abide by that. It's like, well, if the government's giving you $5,000 to buy your insurance with, are you getting 1099 for that? Because that's a straight-up benefit tax.
It sure is, but they won't. And that's the whole thing because, you know, if we look at this realistically, and this is really incredible to me because this deal is not getting a strong reception, even among the House conservatives, the Republicans. And the House Republicans actually called this the Senate surrender clause. That's according to Representative Tim Huelskamp out of Kansas. He's a Republican there. He told the New York Times that they've got a name for this whole thing. It's called the Senate Surrender Caucus, and anybody that would vote in the House as a Republican would virtually guarantee a primary challenger. And that, folks, is what it's all about. It's not about what's right and wrong for the American people. It's about what's right and wrong for the current elected representative. When you get somebody flat out goes out, hey, give him props for being honest. But you know, if you vote for this in the House, then you're going to guarantee a primary challenger. This is nothing but a protectionism of your elected position, and that's what's so incredible about this. I mean, it's the bottom line. But what's really fascinating here too is we've got Representative Louie Gohmert, Republican out of Texas. He's already saying he's going to vote against this bill, and primarily because of the Vitter Amendment. So when you look at this, I mean, he goes on to say that he definitely a no, but the House conservatives will probably get the 218 votes they need. But then he also goes back. This is a guy who's been talking about impeaching Obama and everything else. So he says he's going to vote no on this, all right? But they're probably going to go in 218 votes they need to pass it. But then he goes on to talk about that if Republicans force the U.S. to default on its debt by refusing to raise the debt ceiling. Now, remember, think about what I just said. A Republican congressman out of Texas says, Gohmert says, that if the Republicans force the U.S. to default on its debt by refusing to raise the debt ceiling, then it would be an impeachable offense by the president. And he goes on to say that if the president instructs Treasury Secretary not to pay the interest on our loans on the 17th, that this is getting awful close to high crime and misdemeanor against the president himself. So where does this guy actually stand? This guy's all over the place, and that's the problem with the Republican Party. Would you agree?
Yeah. I mean, first off, the president of priorities, the president is going to pay the interest on the debt. That is the top priority.
Sure.
That's the number one obligation. So first off, the guy's just blowing smoke up everybody's butt when he says that crap. Because that's the first thing that gets paid. Because you got to understand, interest on the debt, that's what funds everything from Social Security to the Medicare Trust Fund to it. You know, you don't fund the interest on the debt, and all of a sudden your interest on the debt is going to explode just like you missed a credit card payment. So,
well, now remember this.
That's going to get paid, and he's blowing smoke. Now, beyond that, you know, as you were saying earlier, that this is just basically if anybody, you know, votes and all this happens, they're going to get a Tea Party challenge or whatever, or a moderate Republican challenge, whatever. I would tell Congress, it's like, guys, your approval rating is at 5%. You're going
right.
to get challengers anyway. If you haven't figured that out, there's a lot of people out there who are, you know, who've thought about it, and they're looking at the math and saying, guys, this is the time. I don't give a crap how he votes or how she votes. Congress's approval rating is at 5%, you know. Only 25% on average of any given congressperson's own constituents would reelect them right now. They're wounded animals. They're like the Bismarck without a rudder.
Well, let me ask you this, though.
It's like, gosh, you're going to get a challenge. So you know what? You might as well stand up and try to do what you think in the country, because you're getting a challenge. The statistics will bear that out.
Well, let me ask you so, because, you know, we say that the top priority in the event that we go past the 17th, is that we will pay the interest on the debt so we don't lose our credibility. Now, see, here's the thing for me. Here's the thing for me. Because normally, in a normal situation, in a normal presidency, in a normal shutdown, we've had 17 other examples of this going into this one, I would totally agree with you on statement. But I'm not 100% sure. And people will call me whatever they call me with this statement, but I'm not 100% sure that Barack Obama feels the same way. Because I tell you, Barack Obama has went, this president has went and made this shutdown about as personal as it could get, shutting down open air, federal land, memorials, everything else.
This goes beyond him. This goes
to the Treasury Secretary
and everybody else. They're going to pay the interest on debt. Plus, he's still a Democrat, and right now, if you're drawing straws, Hillary is the presumptive favorite right now. You know, if she decides to run, she will. You know, and the Democrats in Congress. I mean, if to not pay the interest is literally, it's like performing Harry Carey. I mean, you cannot pay a lot of other stuff and make up for it later on. But if you don't pay the interest, I tell you, it's just like missing a payment on your credit card. Your interest rates are going to, you know, they're going to go up. And the thing is what a lot of people, and I've talked to some bankers that don't seem to get this, it's like when you're at 0.25% or whatever, you're at 3%, let's just say you're at 3% and the interest rate goes up 1%, that's not a 1% increase. That's a 30% increase in your interest expense. So,
sure.
You know, that's the kind of thing that happens. And that's the kind of thing that busts budget, and that's the kind of thing that takes money. It gives you interest obligations. It takes your funny money away. It all things remain the same, your interest expenses go up 30%. Your deficit starts to go back up if you don't increase revenue or don't cut spending. It's just going to evaporate into interest. So, no, absolutely not. We can make a bet on that. There's no way they're not paying that interest, even if they do cross over and don't have the debt ceiling raised.
Well, I'm not willing to place that on that, but I do have some reservations. And, you know, I mean, let's face facts. For the American people, you listen to this show, and there's thousands of you guys, and we appreciate it. You know, but let's look at this realistically, okay? Even Moody's Investors, you know, the rating agency Moody's, everybody wants to use them, Moody's Investor Services, you know, even Moody's says that there is no direct connection between the debt limit and any default by the U.S. government. And why did they say that? They said that the U.S. government will continue to pay interest and principal on its debt, even in the event that the debt limit is not raised, leaving its creditworthiness intact. And see, that's exactly what the Republicans should be out there pointing out and going on, but they're not. They're capitulating. Because the reality is, depending on which report you listen to, and I use number 200 billion. There's some reports to say it's as much as 250 billion, but the IRS is collecting between $200 to $250 billion every month on taxes. That's what they collect. The interest and principal on our debt runs us $20 billion. So you're talking about 10% or less of what they actually collect in taxes is actual debt service. So you'll have 80% funding. And here's, you know, this is all politics. It has absolutely nothing to do with us, because even Moody's says they wouldn't downgrade us because we're going to continue to pay interest in principal. You know, but what do we hear from the federal government? What do we hear from Barack Obama and Harry Reid? Republicans are forcing us into this. You know, we're going to default on our debt. Well, we know it's a lie, but why aren't the Republicans forcing that, telling the people the truth?
Because the media's not on their side, and it makes for good media. But again, that's why I say, and God, I wish I knew if somebody in the Republican, you know, any elitist would be listening. It's like, look, that's why you need to lay out. We had to do it in our business before. We just basically put weighted averages on our payables, and we told everybody you're getting paid by a formula. You know, and you can yell and scream all you want, but until we come out of this slow spot, this is how you get paid. That's why I'm hoping that after all this is said and done, they can say, okay, you know, there's constitutional obligation, blah, 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 you know, article this, article that. Now, let's all sign off on something that says, you know, in some pretty serious detail, says this, this, and this get paid, you know, out of X amount of dollars, this isn't going to get paid. And then everything else is busted up on a weighted average. Put it in black and white, you know, so people can go in and they can look at it and say, okay, well, in the event we run out of money, you know, this is what gets axed first. This is what starts to get smothered next. You know, this is, and this is tape. You know, these are the bare bones. You know, this is the skeleton crew. This is, you know, this is the Christmas party plan, you know. So whatever. They need to come up with that. Because Barack Obama can get away with that. If somebody, you know, a politician can get away with it. But if they pass a piece of legislation that enumerates what gets paid in what percentages, you know, of the gross, then, you know what, that just takes all that politicking out of it. It's just like, okay, look, like the sequester. What did they say? Wham.
Right.
That's across the board. Everybody knew what it was going to be.
And who wanted the sequester anyway?
You could argue about what it was going to do to a program that got cut.
Right.
But there was no debate about how much it was going to get cut.
And that's the other part of the argument, too. Because Barack Obama himself requested, he wanted the sequester language that he got. The Senate Democrats, the Democrats, and Barack Obama, the president himself, asked for this sequester language. Was given the sequester language, and now they're trying to say they want that language gotten rid of and end the sequester cuts if they're going to sit down and talk. So now he wants to end his own policy. Hey, what's really interesting here, too, and this is what's very important for people to understand this, because, you know, Moody's even – he goes on to explain the reality of the situation, and the reality is this, that we have been running using these so-called extraordinary measures by the Treasury Secretary since at least May. We actually reached our debt limit of $16.7 trillion in May, folks. We haven't been able to borrow new money and everything else. They're using these so-called extraordinary measures. That means they're cutting where they need to get through the day-to-day business, which is actually a good thing. But what's really interesting here is we've got a payment due on October the 17th. That's what everybody's freaking out about. And then the first interest payment to that is on October 31st. Those payments are right at $6 billion. Okay, so this is not a big deal, but it is a great opportunity for us to explore one thing here. I mentioned it last night. If Obamacare is the big problem, everybody's freaking out over Obamacare, and the Republicans want to stop funding on it, for one thing, like pointed out last night, Obamacare today is illegal. There is no other way around it. I can't believe nobody has been to the Supreme Court with this yet, but Obamacare was passed into law in 2009, folks. It was passed into law in 2009. It did not allow for any exemptions or anything else. The Supreme Court upheld that Obamacare law was indeed valid, but they said the exception would be that any premiums would be considered a tax. That's fine. But the president does not have the authority to change laws without congressional approval. And that's why Obamacare is illegal in the first place. You can't exempt Congress. You can't exempt small business. You can't exempt corporations. You can't exempt anybody. The Congress has to revisit Obamacare and put those exemptions in place, and then the president has to sign it. So it's illegal as it is. But what's really interesting here, though, is we know that 15% of the government, we don't have government shutdown. We've got 15% of the government deemed as not needed by the government itself. But miraculously, 800,000 people, or 40% of the entire federal employees, work in that 15% of the not needed government. So just found out that 40% of the government workforce is not needed, not necessary. If that's the case, Ed, throw those 800,000 people out of their job, put them in the private sector. I know it sounds cold as hell, but the billions of dollars you're going to save there on pensions and everything else, you roll that over into Obamacare, and voila, we don't have to increase spending, do we? Or increase borrowing.
Well, it wouldn't be enough.
Hey.
And like I said before, in all likelihood, those people, they do bring some value and some service. But yeah, I mean, it's like, hey, welcome to reality. It's as we say in the private sector, everybody's expendable. So, welcome to our reality where they can look at you and say, you can be automated or you can be downsized. You know, it's not that big a deal. There's some smart guy somewhere. There's some guy wanting a job that will knock you right out of it if it's a chance. So, how does it feel? You know,
how would it work in private business?
Next time, maybe when somebody calls up, you'll be a little more courteous. You won't be so uppity, as sometimes government employees can be. Don't everybody have a cow? Some of them are awesome. You know what? I dealt with the Secretary of State a couple weeks ago. They were incredibly friendly and efficient. Can't say the same for the State Treasurer's Office, but Secretary of State
right.
was great.
Well, it's just a great. But you're a small business, Ted.
Again, like I say, they need to lay this out instead of just saying, bam, 800,000. There needs to be, everybody needs to be given a priority as to what your job is. I'm sorry. If you're just emptying trash cans during this moment, a kid doing community service can place you.
I want to be real clear here. I'll be real clear. I'm not trying to tell, 800,000 people they don't deserve a job. What I'm saying is the federal government, our government, their employers, we the people, the federal government elected leaders have said these guys are not needed and not necessary. Not in Springsteen. If they're not needed and not necessary, run your own business. I run my business. And here's the deal. If they're not needed and not necessary, would you keep 40% of your people on the payroll sucking you dry if they weren't needed and not necessary?
No, I might keep a person, which would, in my place would amount to, in our particular branch, would amount to like 10%. But yeah, I would build 10% of flex into something. But yeah, I think that's slow because, you always want to be ready to take on big orders and stuff like that when they hit and not stretch your workforce too thin. You build a little excess into it, but 40%, no way.
There you go. And that's a big deal for me. So you're looking at millions and millions of dollars can be saved there. millions of dollars. Hell, it might be a billion. I haven't done the math. It could be a few billion dollars. I don't know. But the reality is, though, that those are choices that we're forced to make every day in the private sector, and our government fearless leaders think that they're not accountable. And that's why this is such a clusterfuck, pardon the language, but a CFC operation. Because neither side cares. We're fast out of time, my friend. Final thoughts.
Oh, final thoughts. You know, it's I get back to that. I think if anything can come out of this, you know, and it's probably going to happen again because the polarization is there, the debt is there, the debt limits are there. You know, we're about to do Obamacare. You know, if the government's getting really big, really top heavy, so I can imagine we're going to be at these, you know, arguing about these debt ceilings. If a Republican gets in, it's payback time for the Democrats. If another Democrat gets in, the Republicans are going to have another goal with them. So, you know what? If they're going to do anything at all, let's inform the public. Let's get out there and give us more information. Tell us, just like with this question, tell us in the event of this happening again, because, you know, as Washington would say, we're so damn dysfunctional. This is what gets cut. This is what gets cut completely. This doesn't get touched. Lay it all out for us. You know, you might be surprised. The American people might look at it and go, yeah, okay, that ain't so bad. okay, not a problem.
Well,
go
here's
there.
The bottom line. Here's the bottom line, folks. It's real simple. You've got two parties that continue doing nothing more than fighting for two parties. They're not fighting for the American people. There's nobody out there looking out for the American people. The only people that are looking out for the American people and bringing you the truth right here at MVM Radio and all these other alternate media outlets across the country, across the world, because mainstream media has sold out a long time ago. The reality is that we have enough money to pay our bills. The other reality is that we've got politicians on both sides of the aisle that are greedy and want more money so they pay to keep their job and buy elections. That, at the end of the day, is what this is about. You take a poor person and you make them dependent on your handout. You no longer know how to provide for yourself. You become this automaton who sticks their hand out at the first of every month to get everything they can that's supposed to give them survival for the next 30 days. But they don't know what it's like to have to go out and work and fend for yourself to learn survival on your own. And that's what this two-party system has done to us. We're equal opportunity haters here. I get accused all the time of being this ultra-right-wing Christian conservative, and then the liberal left wants to tell me that, and then the conservative right wants to tell me I'm an ultra-lean liberal because I believe in unions. Don't believe in union leadership, but I believe in a rank-and-file worker. So, you know, label whatever you want, but the bottom line is this. The Republicans have bluffed. The Democrats have called their bluff. Let's see if they have the balls to do the right thing and stand tall. Because right now, at this stage, history is going to be written later after we're long gone. And to me, quite frankly, this could be a make-or-break situation for the United States of America going forward in freedom and peace and liberty. And I like the idea that we're shut down. I wish they would stay shut down after the 17th. I wish they would stay shut down, supposedly shut down, I should say, for as long as humanly possible. Because ultimately, they're all going to pay the price at the election polls next year. And I'm sick of this nation being divided based on lies from both sides. Come back to us tomorrow night at 7 o'clock, folks. That's for now. Ed, you have a great night, okay?
You do the same, my friend.
Thank you, sir. Tomorrow night, 7 o'clock, right here, folks. At the MVM Radio Network, I'll be back. I should have Dale the Truth with us. And don't forget Thursday nights at 7 as well with the TN Thursday Night Truth Show and our good friend Mr. Ken Molman with his Liberty Unbridled Show on Sunday nights. In the meantime, folks, enjoy. We'll talk to you then. Take care.